not a case for boundaries. It's more of understanding that marketing is as vital a function as finance, as operations, as procurement.
Today was a crazy one, huh? Like, really amazing.
First person who's reached out to us, completely unknown.
And someone this amazing reaching out to us and being like, hey, am I good enough for your podcast? It's just crazy. It's amazing. You guys are in for a ride. Learning about marketing, podcasting, becoming one of the best podcasts, one of the top 10 podcasts in the country.
Having the confidence to say 9 out of 10 times, I am correct. Conservatively. I think that's just amazing. More of that journey coming right up.
There are certain decisions which an internal team member or a founder will be able to make in the context of marketing, which an agency should not have prerogative over.
Teach the man how to fish and they fish for the rest of their life, and give them a fish and they'll only eat once. So you're trying to teach them how to fish?
If you want to do marketing successfully, you need to have a stake in it. You need to be able to say, this is what I'm trying to achieve over the next 12 months. And then find the agencies and then find the resources who can help you achieve that.
If you're allowing people to make mistakes, and people are going to make mistakes, that's completely fine. I think the problem lies when the mistakes start repeating itself. That's when you have to step in.
We do still operate in a bit of a shotgun world where we want to run things as quickly as possible versus as thoughtfully as possible. And I think communication cannot really be taken out of marketing. Hi, my name is Hasita, and I'm a marketing consultant at Motley Crue, which I also happen to found. The problem that we are trying to solve is that for the longest time, digital marketing has been this thing that no one really understands. You know, you get excited about it, you want to do it, you see other people doing it, but you don't really know how to do it yourself, or you've probably tried something and it hasn't worked. The problem we are really trying to solve is to help you understand. Right. Anyone can do digital marketing. There are a lot of agencies that do that really well, probably better than us. But what we are here to do is to help you understand how it works so that you can do it successfully for as many years as you want to. So I am a firm believer that you shouldn't be outsourcing core functions of which marketing is a big part. The industry has a lot of different opinions and perspectives on this. Obviously, again, it's a very specialist skill. And I think over the last 10, 12 years, we've only made it even more complicated than it was. There are lots of different tools, attribution methods. Doing something for 10, you know, a scale of 10 is not the same as doing something for a scale of 100. And the same experiments that worked at a smaller level simply don't at a bigger level. And sometimes, honestly, the function surprises me as well. And that's the part that I love the most, right? Like, despite doing everything that we do, sometimes the traction we get is from channels and avenues that we didn't even try to do anything about in the first place. So it has to be understood as that holistic thing, and it has to be given its time and due importance. And then you can figure out where an agency like us may probably fit into the picture. That's what I believe.
You introduced yourself as a marketing and communications consultant for companies.
B2B companies.
Yes, for B2B companies. Marketing, yes. Communication?
So I started as a copywriter. So for me, the message is everything. And a lot of times, I think a lot of campaigns struggle because they have not cracked what to say. Or even in some cases, who are we saying it to? And I think communication cannot really be taken out of marketing, because the function is about understanding the other person. It's about understanding their pain points. And hopefully you have something that solves that problem for them. Right? So you need to be able to really very clearly articulate to them in as short an amount of time as possible that you know how to do that. Right? So marketing and communications, I feel, should be the same function, taken care of preferably by different people. Which I'm not doing, but I guess at some point, hopefully someone else will do one of these things and I'll get to just focus on the other.
So marketing would be me communicating my goal, my beliefs, my company's existence to other people.
In my opinion, marketing would be me standing on top of the hill and shouting, look at me, I exist, I do this, come to me and use my services or use my product or XYZ, right?
Right.
Time, however, is a very difficult topic of discussion. For example, some customer comes to you and says, build my Instagram channel, or says, build my website, or says, I want this much traffic on my Amazon outlet. How difficult is it to convey to them that it'll take time? And how difficult is it to actually put a number? How do you quantify that time?
Yeah. So let's split that into two things, right? And firstly, I think it is very difficult. And if there's one thing that founding a company has done for me, it's given me a lot of empathy for the hurry that they're facing. I get it. Right? You have to make money and you have to make money quickly. And marketing obviously is a way to help amplify that and channelize that as quickly as possible. So when I think we come from that place of saying, hey, I understand why you're in a hurry, but this is what it's probably going to look like. A lot of people do understand. Doesn't make them any less restless, but it definitely helps them trust your process a little bit more. We have had instances where despite there being a lot of friction on a day-to-day basis in the operations, finally, when push came to shove, the founder of that company was able to say, no, if you want to talk about this, you go to her or you talk to someone on her team, right? And for us, that trust is everything, right? Because we can't work in environments where that faith doesn't exist at the baseline. So to answer your question on how difficult is it to convince them that it will take time, I think that's the wrong approach. You need to really understand why it bothers them that it's taking time. And hopefully try and speed it up to the extent that you can, and then set the right expectations, right? So then to answer the second half of your question, which is how do we speed it up and how do you quantify it? To this day, there is no way to quantify. Nobody can tell you that if you do this, then at the end of 30 days, you'll have an X number of followers. We had a very interesting thing happen. We were not involved in it, just to kind of put it out there. We work with Forum Malls. We are their creative agency. And they have launched several new malls, one of the most recent one being in Kochi in the south of India. And their digital work is being handled by another agency local to Kerala. And they did an amazing launch campaign. During the course of which I think they made one video which garnered 4.3 million views, right? Which for a city of the size of Kochi is quite a lot, actually. It's not very much, but it's a lot. On the day of launch, there were so many people who had come that the roads were blocked, right? So it's very easy for us to look back and say, we did this video. Actually, we didn't do it, but whoever did that video did it. And therefore, the campaign went viral, right? So as people saw, you know, that, you know, this kind of massive rush is happening, influencers started walking in, celebrities started walking in because they didn't want to miss out on the opportunity to talk about the trending thing in the city. I can very 100% with a lot of conviction say none of this can be orchestrated fully. It's not possible, right? I can make a good video, and by good, I mean a video that understands what it is trying to say and says it in as fun and as entertaining and as simple a manner. But will it get 4.3 million views? I don't think any one of us can engineer that, right? Or I would even go so far as to say maybe you can get 4.3 million views if you spend a lot of money, but that will still not guarantee that on the day of launch, people will still come, right? So it is important to set the right metrics, right? You really do not need the kind of growth that you think followers will get you or views will get you. What you need is resonance, and resonance takes time. It is a product of trust. It is a product of conversation, and conversations have to be had in the space that the customer is giving you. So that would be my answer. Basically, I've skirted the question a little bit, but what I'm saying is no, you cannot promise any numbers.
No, it's lovely that you've taken the path of trust, right?
Yeah, I mean, Hasita, you are the first person and the only person to reach out to us so far. I mean, more than anything, I think the kind of ego boost it was to just see that, you know,
Hasita had a very nice email which said, might I make a good guest for Thought Bistro? And I was like, wait a second, who is messing with me? Who is this person? Which scamster has written this email? And like, it was the most...
me. I am
It was the most, like, I was like, okay, yeah, this cannot be real. This was, you know, I think I read it about five or six hours after you'd sent it. And Akhil was in Canada, so he was asleep. And I was like, what is this? Who is this? What is going on? I don't think, you know, this is just, this is someone messing with us. If I click on this link, my laptop's going to be hacked. It was one of those. So I didn't even click.
Actually, I should have typed something.
I didn't even click on any link. I'll like, listen, wait a second. Let me Google this first. Who is this? What is this? I Googled Motley Crue. I got a band. I'm like, okay, wait a second. Motley Crue India. Then it got me a website, which didn't load on the first attempt. I had, like, it took me two or three attempts for the website to open. Wherever I was like, wait, this person then actually sounds fairly real. Then I saw your podcast and everything, and we were like, okay, yeah, this. Then the sort of thing happened, and I was like, okay, now how do I deal with this? Let's have a conversation. That was the next step. And, you know, in terms of trust, in terms of you trusting us, I mean, I don't even know how we have both of us were just thinking that, dude, how is this happening? Have we already gotten there?
We really, really want to thank you for that trust. Firstly, because...
No, thank you.
We play a game of probabilities, right? The probability is keep putting out half-decent content out there to the best of your abilities. Hopefully, some people will like it and some people will resonate with it. And someday, somebody like a Hasita will reach out to us. The day just came much faster than we expected. And you having expertise in this line, we really wish to probe further. And we wish to ask you, why? Why would you reach out to us?
And we wish to probe on a very personal front, because there is completely selfish driven. We're not doing this to educate anyone else. We are doing this to educate ourselves. So what you're saying about, you know, people being in a rush, there having to be resonance, it's weird how sometimes when we as two people are just like, you know, having this conversation that, okay, yeah, this is where we are going. These are the kind of people we need to meet. This is the next step, or what is the next step we should take? Why is this happening? We should understand this. Funnily enough, the next person we have on the podcast, or the next person I bump into or Akhil bumps into, who wants to come on the podcast, is an expert on that topic. It's very funny how it works. Like, I mean, I don't believe in manifestation or like, you know, world works to make things happen for you, etc., etc. But it's uncanny how often it's happened. Like, I'll give another example. I was at TechSparks Bangalore, and we were looking for venture capital companies. The first 10 people I met were part of venture capital companies, and I did not know who they were. It was just the first 10 people I walked up to, and I was like, hey, how are you? What's your name? So it's funny how things work, but yeah, let's break down how we formed trust in your head enough for you to reach out to us, you know, just out of a cold email, out of an email you found on YouTube.
Sure. I mean, so I'm a big believer in, I'm a bit of a spiritual person, and I do believe that, you know, something is always working on behalf of us. In the sense that I have enough data now to validate, you know, that is indeed a reality. And we have also seen in our work with a lot of different people that the energy that the other person is bringing to the equation makes such a difference in terms of the results that they get. I think on a purely scientific level, perhaps when you're thinking in terms of possibilities, what happens is that you start seeing opportunities in different places. That's probably what is happening. But that still doesn't explain the scale of how certain things work. Right. And I'm very happy to use an example of a client we work with, wherein they work with ISRO. And they were very closely involved in the Chandrayaan project. And we've had the best time working for them. Right. So, in fact, the entire team is also very happy. When they come in the morning, they say, hey, what can we do for these guys? Right? We really want to do something else. And it's one of those projects that somehow just runs on autopilot because my team is so invested in it at this point. Right? I don't even have to tell them, have you done this? It happens, right? I just go and check and it's done. A lot of the results and the success they've derived, I believe, is also because of the mindset of the founder, who we've seen, or rather we've glimpsed into how he thinks on several different occasions. He's very excited about new things, right? He's a visionary in the sense that he knows how to have fun with that vision that he's seeing, right? And it's not a, oh my God, this is my ride or die. If I don't do this in 5 years, then, you know, what's going to happen? It's more of a curiosity, right? It's more of, I wonder what it might be like to be one of the first manufacturing companies in India to take our work digital, right? And when you come from that place of that childlike wonder, right? Like, I think a lot of things just start working for you. And in fact, that mindset is something that I've also tried to adapt. So a lot of me reaching out to you is because I've had the privilege, I would say, of being able to work with people like this and see them up close on a weekly basis, if not more often, and realize that the things that hold us back are often constructs in our own head, right? At this point in time, who am I to sit in my chair and hope that somebody will come to me and say, hey, do you want to be a speaker? They're not going to do it, right? For all intents and purposes, I'm not that famous and it's fine, you know? So it's okay for me to put my hand up and say, hey, I want to do this. It seems like fun. It seems exciting. So I'm going to go ahead and do it. And the second half of what you said, which is how did I begin to trust you? Honestly, it's the content, right? And this is what, you know, we call it the pillar of content marketing, yet none of us really understand it. Which is that if you're not making content again that resonates, that you've had fun with, and the mic is a bit of a, you know, it's very finicky, right? Like it catches energy almost. If, I mean, I have had days of going into the studio and, you know, if I'm dull, if I've not had a coffee, if I'm sleepy, you better believe the mic is going to get all of that, right? Right. So it's important to bring that, you know, enthusiasm, I think, for everything, which you guys are doing. And I've seen that. I heard a couple of episodes. And I really enjoyed the fact that you are holding space for something that's bigger than saying, okay, this is a founder of a company. These are the five things they did to succeed. Versus saying, this is a person, right? They exist outside even of the context of their work. They have interests. They have, you know, responsibilities. They have a life which is very colorful and rich. And let us explore all of that, which I think is literally what we're trying to do in marketing all the time, which is to say, don't make those Heather from HR personas, right? Because they are not Heather from HR. They are people, right? They're going home with very real concerns of, will I have a job next week? Right? How am I going to feed my children? You know, or anyone who's dependent on me for that matter, do I feel passionately enough about what I'm doing? I think a lot of work that we do really needs to, and today especially, we have so many channels, more channels are sprouting every day. We have so much to say. If you put your head up in a city, there's advertisements in like four corners, right? Like you see more ads than trees. So you really need to start understanding where the other person's coming from and make space for that, which I think you guys are doing really, really well with this podcast. So that's when I said, hey, I think I'm in a place where I'm ready to talk about what this journey has been like for me. So let's see what happens. Will they have me?
Who are you, Asita? Where do you come from? Why are you here? Why are you doing marketing? Why not anything else?
Honestly, who am I is a question I've stopped pondering. I think it's too big for the human mind to comprehend, and honestly, we should allow ourselves space to be different things at different points in time, right? So if I say I am this, then I would rather that not come at the expense of everything else that I could be. But marketing, I think, found me, right? I have not studied marketing. I don't have an MBA. I studied healthcare, in fact. But I think the day I graduated, one of my juniors in college, in fact, was running a content company of sorts. And they were writing a lot of stuff, which was being outsourced to the US and the UK markets. And he said, we are doing this part-time, but we need somebody who can look at it full-time. And since you're graduating and you don't have a job, why don't you do this? And I said, okay, cool. Because the funny thing about healthcare is unless you've done like a PhD, there's no, you know, there's no career prospect. So you better be ready to study for the next 10 years of your life, which I wasn't at that point in time.
You should move to Canada. There's always a shortage. Like there's almost entirely always a shortage of healthcare workers here.
See, I didn't know that then. So anyway, all's well that ends well. So I started doing more of that and editing a lot of stuff that was coming my way. In fact, I had started writing very early in my life. My first essay was published when I was about 10, which I didn't see. I didn't think it was a big deal at that point in time. But, you know, I had been quite articulate even as a child. So right through college, I wrote for a lot of magazines and publications, participated in a lot of, you know, as you do in college, a lot of cult fests and, you know, wrote poetry, wrote prose, wrote a lot of thought pieces. And so it seemed like a nice, interesting thing for me to do. I also married very early. So at that time I was getting married and my husband was moving to Bangalore. So I wanted to be able to do something. And I was very clear that I don't want to do a distance thing at that point in time. So I decided to do something that will allow me the flexibility to move around as required. He was also starting up. So we didn't know, will we be in Bangalore 2 years from now? We had no idea. So we decided to kind of, you know, take the path of least resistance and start doing that. So that's what I did. And then, of course, one thing led to the other. I started freelancing a lot more, writing a lot more. And it was, you know, just to kind of go back to what Vishud said earlier, I don't know if it's manifestation as such, because if you don't know what you're manifesting, then I don't think you get to take credit for what happens. But a lot of it was, it just fell into my lap in many ways. What I took was a lot of conviction, was a lot of enthusiasm. I've had no problems going into any scenario and being the blank slate that I am. Right? I have never pretended to know everything. I still don't. So I think that was appreciated, that, you know, ability to be moldable. I think it's a very valuable skill early in the first 4 or 5 years of your career. So when the opportunities came, I was ready for them. Like I was very primed. So I had the opportunity to work with ad agencies, creative agencies, branding agencies, also work in a partnership with an agency in Denmark, got to see their design, you know, approach, their approach to copy, how do they say things that is different from how we say it, and which of them can we adapt to the Indian context. So it's just been an interesting journey of, I think, just learning and exploring a lot of different facets and avenues, I guess. Yeah.
Hasita, you say you don't want to define who you are. Yet in your email to me, you defined yourself as a few things. You said you are a founder, you are a podcast host, you are a scuba diver, and you're a mom. Let's break down those. Since you don't want to define who you are, or like, you know, you say,
this is who I am at this point in time.
You say these are the roles you choose to take on currently. And we'd love to see what roles you end up taking on much later, what roles you had taken on before these. But let's explore these 3-4 roles for now.
Okay, sure. What would you like to know?
You said you were freelancing. So what brought around Motley Crue? How did you end up becoming a founder? Why did you end up becoming a founder? What made you take the plunge?
I don't know if it was a plunge as much as a shaft, but let's start at the beginning. One of my earliest clients, Subha, who also happens to be a co-host on my podcast and, you know, likewise with her podcast as well. In some ways, that is one of those serendipity moments, as you call it, right? I would give 50% of the credit of my career, at least to Subha. Who happens to be a career coach as well in her professional life. So when we met back in 2015, she had just also started out. She quit Citibank after about 15, 20 years of working there. And she knew that she wanted to do something in the coaching space. She had already gotten her ICF certification by that point. was raising two beautiful children. And in some ways, I think she adopted me as this lost duckling who was trying to... I don't think she saw it that way. I don't think even I saw it that way. But in hindsight, definitely, I think her taking me under her wing, and she was one of my earliest clients, I started doing a lot of writing about the workplace for her. So in some ways, I was understanding the workplace without having to be part of one, because she was influencing that. She was mentoring that. And obviously, she had come from such a large organization in a past life. So in fact, she had asked me, and multiple people had asked me at that point in time, what would it take to come in full time? What would it take to just, you know, take on a bigger mantle in whatever we are doing? And somehow I knew even then, and I'm maybe able to articulate it more now, but the knowledge was always there that I prefer autonomy. I need to have space to make certain choices and decisions. And especially in the creative context, I need to be able to say, no, this is not what I would want to do with this. I think this is a better approach, which not a lot of, I mean, not the agencies I worked with, they were very sweet about it. And also I was somewhat independent, so it helped. But in agencies, generally, that free thinking is only being encouraged now. It was not always the case, right? So when you're running a system of 200-300 people or more, it's very important to have people who do things and not just people who have opinions. And I definitely always fell into the latter category. So I don't think in that stage of my life, being part of an agency, and also I still do. In fact, I feel like an imposter sometimes. Like when things work out, I want to ask them, like when they say things like, you know, we want to work with you, or we think you are the right person for this, like the immediate next question in my head is, but why? Like, you know, and at that point, it was an even bigger challenge for me because I was not coming from the background.
First experiences are very weird. And we've had this discussion on the podcast before, but Sakshi was our first guest. Sakshi also runs a marketing firm, and she's in her initial stages as well. But she said yes to being a founder on a podcast which did nothing at the time. No episodes, no base, no reason. And she's like, yeah, I'll come on. Till date, Vishrut and I, we have no clue why she came on. Just like that, you know, how you reached out to us. We will never know. We will never figure out why you have reached out to us. Okay, like 10 years down the line, we will tell this story that Hasita reached out to us and no clue why she reached out.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, sometimes it's okay, right? Like we don't know.
It is.
It's absolutely wonderful. It's not just okay. It's brilliant. And I mean, we are so thankful to Sakshi, because I remember when we started with this thing, okay, we were going to talk to founders. So we're like, okay, fine. What do we do? At that point on YouTube, we had 25 subscribers. On Spotify, we had, I think, 25-30 people who listened to us on a regular basis.
Out of the 25, 4 of them were our own accounts. So like 2 email IDs and 2 email IDs. And like 3-4 were like mom, dad. So those were the people listening to us.
But this was something that till that point we had done purely for, like, you know, we like to talk, let's do this. There was no marketing, there was no push, there was no, oh yeah, I want to speak to XYZ person, or oh, listen to this. There was just, we were just doing it because we were like, you know what, 20 years down the line, we will want to remember these conversations. We will want to read these topics. That was the only reason.
That's a pretty valid reason in and of itself, I feel. I think we are always in search of this big reason or this big meaning, but it doesn't have to be that, right? Like I was saying from one of my earlier clients, just the excitement and the curiosity to find out where it might go is often a lot more powerful than, you know, 5-year plans can ever be, I think.
But Hasita, there are questions. Eventually, you start questioning. Why do you question? Is you have one horrible experience. And that horrible experience makes you feel like, man, this is such garbage. Like, why did I ever get into this? We want your horrible experience on here.
So many, right? Like, obviously, I also have a podcast that's currently running. And season one, we had 0 subscribers, by the way. So till the day we launched, nobody knew except for Subha, me and the production agency. And maybe my husband, who heard me record once or twice. But that was the extent of our launch. And then we just created this broadcast list because the person who was producing it recommended it to us, a WhatsApp broadcast of sorts. And we sent a message out saying, this is what we are doing. And we had a really nice, fun episode. And the first one, in fact, was called "Why? Since When Did Marketing Become Such a Chore? Why is it so difficult?" And it was an interesting episode in that we really struggled to keep it to under 30 minutes. You know, we were going through all those motions at that point in time. And I think episode 4 or episode 5 of that season, it had started ranking in the top 10 of Apple Podcasts India marketing. And that was like why is this happening? Like, someone explain this to me. How do I replicate this? I don't know. Like, you know, is it because people are listening? Is it because they're downloading? You know, what is happening? None of us knew. And after having like such a good run, we ended that season on a high, and we always knew we wanted to do seasons because we like taking personal time off and we wanted to make enough space for that. After all of that, we started season 2 thinking, oh, now we're going to scale even further heights and it's going to be so amazing. You know, we are just like 2 episodes away from getting funded and sponsored to produce this and that. And no one cared about that season at all, right? We got too much into the technicalities of it, and somewhere I think we lost the plot in terms of it being fun, which it was supposed to. And that energy started translating quite a lot into the work that we were producing, the topics that we were choosing. We got some good guests, but we couldn't, create. In fact, even the guests we had orchestrated to have people who in themselves have a few thousand followers. So we started basically messing with something that is already working. And that season went downhill very quickly. In fact, I decided to stop it at 10 episodes instead of the 12, which we had planned. I remember having fun with exactly one episode in that entire season, which was a guest episode, maybe one or two now that I think about it. But that was that. And I couldn't wait for it to be over in many ways. And after that, we took a really long break. We did nothing for 6 months. And when I came back, it was with a lot of insecurity. It was like, do I want to do this? Is this even worth it? Why am I spending my time doing this when, quite frankly, I could be diving with all the time that I'm spending doing, you know, the prep for this. So that phase happened. But I think the good thing, I'm sure, and you guys see this as well, is having that co-host. And in some ways, as in my podcast, as in my professional life, Subha has been that person who's able to say, okay, hang in there for just a little longer. Like, the light is really at the end of this tunnel and you're giving up like 5 minutes before you get out. So just hang in there, finish what you started. In fact, I was talking to her the other day and I was saying, you know, maybe this podcast is having its final run in some ways. Maybe this is the final season. Not because I'm disappointed, but because I feel like I've said everything that I wanted to say. When we started the podcast, the purpose was very different, right? I was having the same conversation over and over again with multiple people saying, you will not get followers the day you start an Instagram channel, or if you run ads this way, it's going to fail. So we said, if we just record and put it out there, then it becomes easier for us to tell people this without really telling them that. Like, how do I tell this at scale was literally the only idea. It ended up doing some amazing and magical stuff. And that's when we started getting a little greedy. And I think that, I wouldn't say like, you know, it's not the philosophy of greed bigots, you know, like whatever, dissatisfaction. I don't think those things are true. I think we could all benefit from being a little more selfish and, you know, want things from time to time. But the moment you start noticing something and saying, okay, hey, this seems to be working, let me deconstruct and find out why this is working, it can go both ways. And at least with my podcast, it didn't always go the good way, right? Because the ecosystem itself is so new, right? I think only now we are discovering that YouTube has a better discovery algorithm than most podcast platforms do, right? So, but we had never intended it to be a video first podcast. In fact, we don't have videos for any of the episodes that we produced. So how do you then take it and put it on YouTube? That is something we are figuring out over the last 48 hours. In fact, apparently there are apps that allow you to do that. You don't have to have faces. They make, you know, some interesting doodles and stuff, and you can get stuff up there, and then you can decide, do I want to do a video podcast or not? And I think it's important sometimes to be able to look at our own creative work especially and say, has it run its course? And the only way to know it's run its course is if you've stopped having fun with it. If it's something you wake up in the morning and think, oh, one more thing that I have to do, then I think it's probably, you know, had its phase. The other thing also from a very practical standpoint to consider is, am I repeating myself? You know, sometimes I find even when we're recording that maybe I'm saying the same things over and over again, which means that it's really time for me to step away, to learn and to come back with something more, because the audience has given me the gift of their time for those 30, 35 minutes. I can't waste it by saying the same thing I said the last time around. So how can I keep, you know, challenging myself and keep growing? So I think both options exist. As far as the Damn Good Marketing Podcast, very high standards, is concerned, I think I'm also in that process of making that decision. So we'll see what happens.
Asita, I think making a decision to be like, I have said all I need to say, or, you know, this is me, this is the limit of my knowledge. I think that is in itself a massive thing, because we as humans do not like to do that. It's not something that we are very open to being like, yeah, you know, this is all I have to give. We're always like, oh, this person is giving me more attention. How can I maximize it? There's always that thought process. And I think Akhil and I have gone through something very similar and keep going through this, where we are like, are we becoming repetitive? Are we saying the same thing too many times? Because I think the advantage there comes in the fact that both of us edit our own the episodes ourselves. Like, I edit it in the longer form, then Akhil sort of just like fine tunes it. So we both end up listening to a lot of the work. And because we have about a backlog of about 2-2.5 weeks, we can sort of relate what we have said about a couple of weeks back to what we've just currently said in one of our recordings.
We also have a constant discussion, and I feel like the discussion has been ramping up recently, about, since we are busy on the podcast, we've not been getting time to read. And I feel like us reading a lot more content helps with our content and the freshness of our own content. So we've been trying to divert more time towards consumption as well, rather than just production. That becomes an instant balance of things.
Yeah, the engineering of the breaks really helps, right? And it's always been very helpful for us. Not just with the podcast, even with work, we take a really long break in the month of December, where everyone's getting time off, right? And in fact, one thing I've been very protective about over the last decade or so of working is holidays, right? Saturdays, Sundays, public holidays. You better be like, any holiday, I will take it. Like, I have no qualms in admitting, because I come back a better person at the end of it. And yeah, I think the downtime, it's really nice that you guys are asking that question. And taking time off is one of the most underrated, you know, things to do in today's, I think, ecosystem.
And again, a very timely discussion, because in about 10 days' time, we are taking some time off and we will be a little away from recordings for a while. So yeah, let's see. Yeah. We'll still be editing though. let's see how those 15 days help us.
You let me know.
Yeah, I think we ourselves are looking to find out, because for us in the past 5 months, it's been very at it, because we've just been like, you know what, we have to make this happen. Let's you know, meet people. Let's see where we can, what we can do, how we can do it. And we've just been, you know, going, doing whatever we can. So this might be the first sort of reflection point or learning point, whatever you call it. I'm very intrigued to see what we come back as.
Lovely. I wish you the best.
Hasita, I want to talk about your approach. Your approach to marketing is a little different, right? For example, my sister is very well read on the topic of diet. She knows what to consume, how much to consume, how much protein she should have, what kind of calories she should intake, what workouts she should do, everything. And the next day, she'll hire a dietitian. Why will she hire a dietitian? So that somebody can hold her liable. So instead of having the discipline be liable, I want an external human being be liable. In business, it is the equivalent of, I have hired a marketing person, just let them take the load off me. I'm done. I'm out. But your approach is a little more of a guru. Your approach is a little more of a, let me teach you a little bit about marketing so that you actually know what you're doing. How often do business people actually wish to learn
And how do you find the ones who actually wish to learn? What's the process?
No, I think honestly, a lot of them are very open and receptive to knowledge, right? Just the fact that they've taken this huge swing and decided to run these companies at this mind-boggling scale and size. Like, if I was in charge of the kinds of revenues that they are, I would not be sleeping in the night, you know? But these are people who somehow, they've managed to make it look so easy, right? Because they have kept abreast of what's happening in the world around them. I think a lot of business leaders are very naturally marketing leaders. They just don't realize it because everything they are building is for somebody, right? And just the fact that they have the outlook to say, this is what I'm doing for this person already makes you a marketing person, right? It's not about, do I know how to calculate my acquisition costs or my lifetime values? I think these are, unfortunately, what the domain is presented as. Or do I know how to use HubSpot? Like, I mean, hell if I know, right? But I know people. I know the people that I'm building this for. And what the, and that's why I really feel like it, we could all benefit from a somewhat unconventional approach. And I can be very honest and tell you that to me, when I did this approach, it didn't seem unconventional. It was the only approach because I have not had any other approaches. I have not had exposure to any other approaches. But it was quite evident to me that these are not people who are fundamentally unwilling to learn, right? And learning is a very core value for me. Like, I mean, on days when I'm really struggling with something or if I'm going through a phase in life, what I resort to is always learning, the experience of reading or listening to something or just going out there and exposing myself to other perspectives in the form of travel, perhaps. So I don't think curiosity dies as we grow up. It's just that it probably is occupied by other stuff that happens. And again, in the context of maybe doing the kinds of numbers, managing the kinds of people that you're managing, you may not always have the time for this, right? It's not an inclination problem, it's a time problem. So it's really about how do you package it for them in a way that makes sense to them in faster ways, right? Which is why one of the core work that we do is actually the workshops, more than the retainers, more than the execution piece. We have this model where we spend a day, we spend 2 days with that team and just help them understand, hey, this is why your process is probably not working. Or if you're starting up, then I'm sure you have 10 things to do, but these are the 4 things that you should probably prioritize based on who you are as a person. Right? It's not about, you know, should you start Instagram? Okay. I mean, to some extent, if you are a B2C company and you have pretty looking products, then please be on Instagram, at least for now. But how do you show up on that platform? Right? How do you make sure that it's not a short-term thing, right? Like, I can get excited about it for a month, but when I have to do it for 2 months, when I have to do it for 3 months, when I have to do it for a year, in fact, to this day, just like you guys, while we do have a production company and they take care of most of the workload, I still listen to every episode at least 3-4 times before it goes out. Not because I have the time, right? But because I really do want to make sure that with what we have as raw material, we do the best possible job, right? That I think everyone is inclined to do. Everyone is willing to do, right? You just need to show them that, hey, you are empowered, right? And I genuinely believe that we all can benefit from getting out of the space of, okay, let me help you do this. Like, we do it with children, right? Like, oh, you're not capable enough, so I'm going to do it for you, right? It doesn't help. Right? So tomorrow I leave or you fire me for, you know, whatever reason, then what happens, right? You've just made it harder for everybody by creating a dependency where it didn't need to exist in the first place. Like, you be in charge of your numbers, yeah? You be in charge of your revenue. You know what you want to make, or rather, you know what you need to make, right? So you come back and tell me, this is what I'm trying to achieve, right? And be very, very, and that is where I find that a lot of people actually can't do that, right? People can't really come up, there are very few people who are able to come up and say, this is the revenue number we are aiming for, and this is how broadly I think we are going to get there. That clarity I've seen probably in 2 or 3 people that I've worked with in all of these years. And, you know, you be in charge of that. And then I'll tell you how to make it happen. So I think, I just don't like dependencies in any way. And in fact, I'm also very hands off with my team internally as well. I feel like it's okay for them to make mistakes and learn rather than constantly breathing down their necks and telling them, okay, this is not working or that's not happening. You know, it's just not my thing.
I think that's where the productivity comes in, right? If you're allowing people to make mistakes, and people are going to make mistakes, that's completely fine. I think the problem lies when the mistakes start repeating itself. That's when you have to step in. And I think, I mean, I'm sure from what you're saying, that I'm sure that's the case.
I mean, if you're hiring capable people, then you already know they're not going to make the same mistake twice by intrinsic principle, right? If they're still making the same mistake twice, then you probably had something to do with it. So I think that self-awareness is sometimes important, yeah.
Now, how many people have that self-awareness?
Hard-earned.
So coming back to this self-awareness and speaking about the goal setting that you were talking about. So coming back to spirituality as well, the Bhagavad Gita has this very popular verse where they're saying, you know, focus on the process, don't be result-oriented. So I was reading a interpretation of it where it said, what does this mean? It doesn't mean you are goalless or resultless and you're just doing something for the sake of doing it. Saying that I am focused on the process, I am not goal-oriented, I don't have a goal. That's not what they say. They say, have a goal, plan everything out on how you're going to achieve that goal. And once you're sure that your plan is in place, then when you're working, don't think about that goal until you achieve that goal. Then follow that plan religiously to get to that point where you're getting to that goal. It's not that every 2 days you're like, okay, where is my goal? Okay, where is my goal? If you're giving yourself a 1 month timeline, follow that 1 month timeline. If you're giving yourself a 1 year timeline, build it up and plan it intricately and follow it. So I think that's where people go wrong a lot of the times, or people end up misconstruing what they're reading.
I kind of want to build on that. So based on my understanding of the Bhagavad Gita, the karam or the purpose why you are alive is built on your current knowledge. And Hasita, you know something that we do not. Hence, you have a successful marketing firm, or you have a successful communication firm, or however you would like to place yourself in the demographic of things. What do you know that we don't know? Let's go with top three things you know that we don't know that would make you better at marketing. I can clarify further. If I pick you up today, I take away all of your assets, strip you of your company, and leave you in the middle of India, you can probably build your firm again in a span of 4, 5 years, 10 years, or whatever the timeline may be. But you will build it. You do the same with me. I cannot build your firm because of something very specific that you know. Maybe 3 things, maybe 5 things. Let's go.
Honestly, I had never thought of it that way. I really think that with the right mix of circumstance, I think anyone can, you know, achieve the same results. But maybe that's the secret sauce that you're talking about. It's possible, right?
Which is also ironical. I'll tell you why. Because when we build a podcast on YouTube, we know how little it takes to actually upload stuff on YouTube, right? And then you start thinking, it is so stupid. How do people not upload stuff on YouTube? Right? It's so straightforward.
Right, right. And for me, it's the other way around, right? I'm like, oh, I have to dress up every day and I have to show up in front of the camera.
Exactly. So now, doing the YouTube part, we know how to make thumbnails or make descriptions, maybe not the best ones, maybe not even good ones, maybe like trashy ones as of now. But we do know how to make them. We do know how to put them up, right? Because we know something a little bit because we've been doing it. But how do we put that in words?
No, that actually makes a lot of sense. It's a conversation on mindset more than, any specific skill set or attribute that you could pick up. Honestly, one of the first things that comes to my mind is it may not always come across that way, but I am somewhat of a very gentle person. Right? I don't know if gentle people say they are gentle, but I'm going to go say it. In that, I really believe, and it has worked for me and it has worked for a lot of people that we work with in the past, that there is benefit and value in slowing down your decision-making process. So we, in some ways, if I had to say the USP of what we do, is we help you slow down the process to such an extent that you can now zoom in and see everything that you need to see. We are very uniquely positioned to be able to do that because A, I am that kind of person. B, we have a past track record that says it works. So if I had to, you know, make it a little less abstract than that, what we are saying is, you come to us with, you know, reports from four tactics that you've tried. You come to us with, you know, some bitter experiences involving digital marketing in the past. We know exactly how to spot the problem in it. And 9 times out of 10, that's me playing it safe, we are right. Right? That is something we've built over many, many years of, you know, doing what we do. So today, if you leave me in a random market somewhere in the world, and I see someone and I see that they're not able to sell, I know instinctively why they're not able to sell. Right. So definitely, I think that has had a huge role to play in how Motley Crue has come to be. The second thing that I can think of, honestly, is the diversity of opportunities that I was exposed to over many, many years in the workplace. Not everyone gets to work with an agency that also has an office in Copenhagen. Not everyone probably gets to handle an account the size of Forum Malls within 4 years of their career. So again, being prepared for that opportunity simply by saying yes and then figuring out how to do it. But largely just saying those yeses over a period of time has exposed the team and I to a certain number of diverse perspectives and a certain number of, I would not even perspectives, actually just knowledge, right? That among the three of us plus the two, you know, folk who work with us on contract, we are able to do a lot more than we would have otherwise. So we don't really, for example, today we don't need a web developer all the time, because among the three of us, we know how to do Webflow, WordPress, Wix, probably even a little bit of Joomla. Any CMS you give us, we are good, right? Likewise, with a lot of tools that we use for marketing automation, you know, email campaigns, like we really are not 100% dependent on someone else coming in and doing it. It's very, very rare that we have to go out. You know, either we don't have time or it's really technical and we don't know how to do it. Those are the only two instances where we have to work with someone outside. In saying that, we are also very aware of the things we don't know. For example, performance marketing, while we read reports and we are very good at reading the reports, we are not always primed to be able to run campaigns on a day-to-day basis because the team is doing content, right? They need to be able to focus on that. So we partner with an agency in Calcutta, incidentally, called Tick Tactic, and they do all of our performance marketing campaigns. And even there, we've been very intentional. They only do performance marketing for B2B companies, which is really good for us because we don't have to explain things to them. Right? We just take the pitch deck. We have maybe like a 10-minute conversation. And they tell us these are the three things we need for us to be able to run this campaign successfully. And this is going to be the budget. We give them that and then they run with it. Right? They only come back to us either to report or to come up with problems that have arisen along the way. So, I don't know, if I had to package it, I would say knowing what we know and really building on that over a period of time, being somewhat diverse in terms of what we can execute, and then also being very, very aware of what we cannot execute. So, I would say these are the three things that make us who we are.
Let's throw a spanner in the mix, Hasita. Why are you not the biggest marketing firm in India? What do you not know?
You say 9 out of 10 times conservatively.
It's just, yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not me, you know, showing off at all. It's just, it's been our experience in the past, right? So, and that's where the confidence is coming from, right? Like we've seen why things don't work too much. So for the spanner that you've thrown, honestly, it's not as big of a spanner, honestly, because that's not my dream. I am not trying to be the biggest marketing firm in India. I am just trying to do the right thing for a very small number of people who resonate with the values that we resonate with, right? I am just trying to have a conversation with someone who says, hey, there's something here which is both exciting and worrying. And we feel like you know exactly what we're talking about. So what can we do together? right? And we are really in the market for the people who are so excited about their ideas that when they talk about it, they bring tears to our eyes. That's what we are here for. And if it is one company, I'm okay with that. But surprisingly, it's not one company. There are many of those. Right? And I'm more than okay with that. But that's really what we're trying to do. Which is why we don't force fit solutions.
I think that's the beauty of founders. For us, it's been a very similar experience again. Where we're like, we are looking for passion. We're looking for integrity and we're looking for intelligence. And the number of people whom we have come across, the sheer numbers, like today we are at a loss where we were like, oh my God, we have this. We never thought we're going to be in this situation where we have a backlog of 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We always thought that, okay, yeah, we get a person to record, we edit, and we post. But today that we are in this scenario where, and we're telling people that, hey, listen, this is our thing. We're not like, you know, you're going to come to us today, but we're going to have to wait 3 weeks. And they're like, yeah, sure, it's fine. And we're like, what are we offering? So brilliant to hear people, like to hear you talk about your process, to hear you talk about the way you think, your passion, your whole personality comes out so beautifully because...
That's the joy in the journey that you were talking about.
We both of us can see that, you know, the level of thought that you put into what you're doing. I think also the biggest thing that stood out to me is how much you have like emphasized on, I work to understand myself. These are the things I can do. These are the things that I should do. These are the things that I can learn. And these are the things that are out of my jurisdiction. So here I'm very open to hiring help.
I think it's so important, yeah.
And I think just having that level of clarity is beautiful.
And honestly, a lot of that clarity has emerged also over a period of time, right? Like in the first year of starting the company, I was quite miserable. And I have no qualms in admitting that. Because it was the first time I was facing the very real problem of cash flow, right? And it was not fun. I hated every minute of it. It was very difficult. I was not really taking any money out of the system for a very long time, which for someone like me, I come from a very middle-class background. So it's not a very normal, natural, you know, thing to say, okay, I'll not be earning anything for the next 12 months. So, but let's figure this out. So it was very difficult. And that's where I'm really very grateful for all the, it really takes a village, you know, and there are so many of those people, both in the role of clients, friends, partners, the team that believed me and came on, right, so early, who held it together as much as I couldn't. And I'm very cognizant of that fact, right? So on the days when I didn't know, should we be doing this, should we not be doing this, a lot of that external validation did help 100%, right? And just being held, and honestly, I think everyone should. Subha happens to be a friend of mine, so she has no choice but to coach me. But I think everyone could really benefit from having someone like that in their lives, right? Whether you call it a coach or whether you call it, you know, a mirror, if I could put it that way.
Money is a very real topic of discussion. And, you know, you were into marketing and marketing can easily be a job that you build for yourself. But you go out and you get a team, which in by itself makes it into a business. It's no longer just me freelancing around, getting my service out and charging for my time, right? Let's talk about money. Let's talk about what does it take? What are your costs? If you're comfortable, then what is your revenue and how has it been going? What has the trend been like? Your trend line, your growth? You'd love to know more.
So funnily enough, from the days of freelancing, even to this day, we've always doubled our revenue every year. In the sense that even when I was independent, I was still doubling revenue simply by taking on projects of a higher value. That, of course, came to a threshold at some point, as all things do. And that threshold was my own knowledge. Luckily, in some ways, the pandemic also happened at that time. And a lot of the work that I had in the copy and content space, it just left. So for 2 months, I was jobless, which was really quite valuable in hindsight because it did two things for me. One is I signed up for a course with UpGrad in digital marketing and communication. And I said, there is a lot of knowledge in the form of many different dots just hanging around in the universe. But now the time has come to connect them properly. And that course, truly, I highly recommend it. It's one of the most well-structured courses in India on marketing at this point in time. That took about 6 to 8 months. And there was a lot of project work, small group sessions and discussions. Really, I learned a lot from that process. And towards the end of that, someone that I knew in my ecosystem, I asked them for a content role and they gave me the role of a marketing consultant. That was my first stint doing something that I didn't know how to do. That phase in and of itself was very difficult. That project, and I don't, you know, give only that project its blame or anything of that sort. We were trying to do something quite impossible and I was doing it for the first time and I didn't know what the hell I was doing except for experimenting on a daily basis. It took a toll on my mental health to the point where I had to slow down and really reconsider what is it that I want to do in a role like this. Then I reached out to a few mentors who already work in the marketing space. I said, I just need someone to tell me that my ideas are either good or bad. Because at this point, I don't have any reference point. So I started doing some sessions with another dear friend of mine who was very gentle, but also very clear in her feedback. She has been in marketing for much longer than me. And that was very helpful. So I did those sessions for about 6 to 8 months. Parallelly, I was also in therapy for a variety of reasons, not just work. I was diagnosed formally with anxiety disorder in January 2021. And in fact, it was a moment of relief because I had suspected that about myself for a very long time. It's just that sometimes in India, we don't always have access to the kind of resources that tell us that this is what is happening. But that was truly a very cathartic period of time for me. And once the diagnosis was made, I actually started almost blooming, I would say, in many ways, because I was not limited by something that was holding me back. I knew exactly what was going on. December 2022, we founded Motley Crew, which I think to the outside world, it might seem very counterintuitive in the sense that why would you go dig your own grave a second time around if you're already suffering and you're paying therapy bills? But it was just the most logical thing we could have done at that time. I think sometimes when things are ready to happen, they don't wait for your approval. And at that time, the best thing you can do is just go with the flow. And that's exactly what happened with us as well. Two, three things happened. My first employee is, in fact, my own sister. She has a background in design and she graduated just about then. She had been interning with me part-time for 5 years before that. So I knew that she knew how I work. And I really needed someone in the system who saw my idiosyncrasies and just ran with them, right? So I offered her the role. In fact, it was not even a role. I said, basically, you will come in and you will do anything that we do on that day. So if we are sweeping the floor, then you sweep and I'll mop. That's what we'll do. So she was very open to that idea and she came on board, which was also very beneficial because she's much more practical than I am. I am more of an emotionally driven individual and she's a very practical human being. So today she handles most of our operations and execution. I do more of the client interfacing and marketing for myself, if I could call it that. But honestly, it's just a lot of relationship, building and nurturing, right? So that was the journey. And obviously, money had a big role to play throughout all of this. So the moment you found anything, there is a bit of a challenge. But I'm very grateful. And sometimes I try not to look at it with too much attention, lest I kill it. We ended up doubling revenues again. Obviously, the cost had gone up. We had hired a couple of people. But we still managed to maintain a revenue margin of about 50 to 60%, which for service industries, for a business like this, is still quite high. And I realized that in saying that, my time and money is not accounted for. And what I mean by that is, the reason we're able to charge a premium is because of the amount of time we're able to give to each individual entity. And that time is my time again at the end of the day, right? So am I not costing for it? No, I think I'm at this point, I'm a lot more comfortable with the idea of a bigger picture. It doesn't really bother me how much I'm able to take out of the system on a month-on-month basis. But as long as I know that we are financially headed upward, I'm happy. In saying that, this year, I know we are not going to double revenues because we made a very conscious decision in January of this year to say that if we scale right now, we are going to fail because we don't know how to do some of the things that we need to do well. So this year, we had two mandates. One is we are heading into recession, so don't lose clients. Secondly, don't scale up in a hurry. Don't sign on projects that don't make sense to you, that don't resonate with you. Just do good by the people that are already there. And quite interestingly, those people have extended their own mandates and started paying us more. So I guess in some ways, we just have to wait for March and see what happens. It's probably not going to be double, but it's still very much an upward trajectory.
Harshita, I think a couple of things I just wanted to point out. The beautiful juxtaposition where you're diagnosed with anxiety disorder and you feel so much more secure in yourself and you're like, that gave me the confidence to move on. I absolutely love it. And the other thing is understanding or having someone who understands your idiosyncrasies. I have this theory which I try to follow, which is, find your kind of weird. We are all our own kind of weird and we have to just find our own kind of weird and run with it. So I think that just fits right in my wheelhouse and I resonate very, very strongly with that. Speaking of that, we like to have this, we have this tradition on our podcast where we end with a question that was left for you by our previous guest. We'd like to answer that question and leave a question for the next guest. So the question for you is, if there was one thing about your journey which you could have changed, what would that be?
It's taken me a lot of work in a lot of different contexts to come to the conclusion that I would have changed absolutely nothing, actually. Whoever I am, and it's taken a lot of work, right? It's not, I have raved and ranted. I mean, if my therapist was here right now, we'd be having a very different conversation, right? So why me? And, I'm also human, finally. So... But yeah, it's only more recently and in saying recently, like the last couple of months, in fact, I've realized that I am today a product of every single thing that came before me, right? And me questioning that is not going to help in any way. In fact, it's beautiful that it happened the way it did. Like, I mean, if we work with the baseline that I like the person I am today, then by default, I like everything that came before, right? So... I really don't think I would have changed anything. And even more pragmatically, if I were to put on the practical hat and I look at it and say, maybe I would have done this differently. Sure, there are some projects where I feel like at that point in time, I didn't know enough to have signed up for them. But still, the bigger picture still remains that all of those things. So I'm a sum total of all of that.
One last thing. If you had to give us like one line, Motley Crue does.
Motley Crue does pretty damn good marketing, I would say.
Love it. Can we get your question now?
Sure.